Welcome back, DGS. A few minutes past 4 p.m. So this Sunday, it's been a long time coming, but this Sunday the 22nd at Creve Coeur Park, I will be taking part in the AFSP Suicide Prevention Walk. Our buddy Tony Scott, you're going to be the host, right? The MC?
Yep.
Very nice.
So that'd be my third year.
Very nice. Yeah. This is my first year. It's my first time ever being at a walk. I've avoided walks at this point. I'm not sure how exactly.
Yeah.
But this will be my first walk, my first AFSP. Andrew's going to go with me. My son Nick's going to go with me. Looking forward to it. For people who have never been like myself, what should they expect?
A lot of togetherness, a lot of people who are strong, who are warriors, who are there to comfort each other. You walk. The interesting thing is you walk when you want to walk. It's you walk at your own pace, and it's kind of thing like that. But there are people there who will be acknowledged, and people who will tell some stories and stuff like that. But it's a nice vibe, though. It really is. I was surprised. First time I went, I went, wow, this is really cool. And you'd be a surprised at the amount of people that suicide has affected, right? You, right? You know, I remember when I was a kid, I must have been like, I wasn't even going to school, man. I was like 4 or 5 years old when suicide was first a thing. There was a man who lived next door to my cousin named Jonesy. And they said Jonesy committed suicide. So I thought everybody who died committed suicide. I didn't know what suicide meant, right, until I was older. And, you know, my ex-wife's brother died from suicide. This guy I went to high school with died. Well, about three guys I went to high school with hung themselves. And one of them had been in prison for a long time, and when he was released, he could not cope with the outside world, so he hung himself, right? And then his brother did the same thing.
Wow.
And it's just, you know, and it's like, you know, and me, and I'm going to be real honest with you, with my mental struggles that I've had over the years, there was a time in my life where that was on the table for me, right? Because I just could not get a grip on this thing called life. It was hard, and it was harder than I thought it was supposed to be, and I felt like I was losing my grip. And my former program director, when I worked in Magic back in the day, he pulled me in his office one time, closed the door, says, I need to talk to you. Not as a boss, as your friend. He goes, you got this immense talent, but something's wrong. I think I told you this before. And I started seeing a professional who referred me to a psychiatrist who told me, yeah, there's a problem here. And explained to me exactly, you know, the serotonin thing and how my brain wasn't making it, and these medications are going to help that. He said, you're going to feel like a different person. Took me 3 weeks before I decided to take it. Took it, saved my life.
How were you feeling before that?
I was in mud. I was stuck in mud. I couldn't get out. And when I tried to climb out, I'd slip back in the mud. And it was yucky. It was hot. It was hellish. It was dark. My mood was dark. Everybody was out to get me. Nobody liked me. I didn't care. I was tired. I was exhausted, and I just wanted it to stop.
Did it come on fairly quickly, or in hindsight, had you felt that way since you were a young man?
Since I was a young man, right? I remember growing up, and people would say, "Man, life is hard. Life sucks. Life is just it's hard." So I thought everybody felt that way, but then, you know, it seemed to accelerate itself like the last maybe 2 or 3 years. Before I actually got some help. And that's when I was really, really, I was really struggling. It was really hard, right? And my girlfriend at the time, who I eventually married and have been married to her for 30 years this year, took it. She took the verbal abuse. She took the woe is me attitude, the nobody wants me and stuff like that. And then when I got on the medication, they said for 4% of people who take the antidepressants, one of the side effects is loss of libido. And of course, yeah, of course that's going to happen to me, right? And my wife, she says, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, right? Just get better. It's all that matters. Just get better. And she looked out for me and she protected me. And something that I'll forever be grateful to her for. And, but yeah, it was a dark, dark period. And I didn't have an out. Until Chuck Atkins says, we got an EAP program. You can do this, right? But you have to do it. I can't do it. No one can do it for you. You have to call.
When you were having your suicidal thoughts, and this is the wrong term, but was it hot or cold? Was it, I'm so out of here. I'm so done with this. I'm so sick of it. Or was it more of a resign yourself to, I'm just not happy. I don't, whatever this is that's going on, I'm just not digging it.
It was both. It was both. I wasn't happy. And I was like, well, you know, there's some things I did in my life that I will never tell anybody about, right? And I just always figured it was payback time.
Catching up with you.
It was payback time, you know, karma, right? And it was catching up with me. And my wife says that doesn't work that way. And she kept telling me it does not work that way. You have to understand what I'm saying. It doesn't work that way. If it worked that way, there'd be nobody walking the planet, you know? You know, it was a process. It seemed like it took forever for me to get to that moment, and it did. And I mean, like I said, I felt like I was in a pit of mud and I couldn't get out. And when I tried to climb out, when I told myself, this is it, I'm getting out of this, and I tried to climb out, I'd slip back in because it was mud and it was slippery and it was wet and it was constantly raining, you know, hellish on me. And I didn't know. I just didn't know. And I couldn't get a grip. If it wasn't for her and for Chuck, who gave a damn, and those little pills, you know, I can tell you with 100% certainty, absolutely saved my life. And I went on the radio, and I've always been very open about my journey, and because I figured if I could help one person who felt the hell that I was in, if me talking how I did this can motivate them to do it, then I'll be open about it. And I can't tell you the amount of times that I've made appearances with the radio station and men have come up to me in tears saying that I helped them by talking about it. I had a coworker who was struggling and it was so funny because coworkers of mine, they were scared to get the number to the EAP program. So I would get it and I would lose it. And someone else said, hey man, can you get that number for me? You know, I said, yeah. So I'd go in the HR person. She goes, you need the number? I'm like, yeah. She was like, yeah, okay. She'd write it on a post-it and give it to me. And I'd give them the post-it. And, you know, and I said, call it. It's gonna be a life changer for you. And, you know, there are people who come to me and they would say, well, I'm going to let God fix me. I'm like, well, how do you know God isn't putting me in your life to tell you this is what you need to do so that you can be well, so that you can help somebody?
Think how lucky we are as well, Tony, that, you know, you and I are similar ages, that had we been born one generation before that.
Yeah, we'd have been done. There was no out for that. And my father, rest his soul, my father, he didn't understand it. You know, what's wrong with you? I don't get it. And my wife told him, there's something wrong with him that you're not going to understand. And no one's going to understand it. Only he can understand it. Only he can get better. So, but you need to give him space. And my father understood that, and not in a bad way, but he understood that. But he told me, he goes, I don't get it. Why do you need to see a head shrinker? That's what he would say. He goes, I don't get that. You're a man. That's what they did back then, right? Mm-hmm. My father taught me not to cry. Right, and so when my father died, I've never cried about my father dying ever to this day, right? I would never do that to a young man that was my son. I would never do that to any, you know, I got grandsons. I would never do that to them. My father was a great father, but he didn't know what he didn't know.
Yeah. Right.
And he didn't know how to allow a male descendant of his be human. He didn't know how to do that. And it was, like I said, because of someone named Chuck Atkins and my wife who stepped in and go, nope. This is normal. To feel this way is not normal, and we're gonna get you through this. And they did, and I'm thankful to them to this day.
It's pretty amazing. Some things take generations and generations and generations, and to go from your dad and my dad, who would have been exactly the same way and was exactly the same way, mm-hmm. to us, mm-hmm. that's a big change.
Yeah.
In one generation.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't. My father was a great man, and I honor him every day in how I conduct my life. But that was something that was wrong, and it's okay. A lot of people, they hold their parent on a pedestal, and the Bible says we should honor our mother and father. And I get all that, but they're human, and they used to say a long time ago, well, they don't make books about parenting. Well, they do now, but back then they really didn't, right? And it's something that I, even to this day, I give him grace because he didn't know. But I know. And my children, I want to know about everything they want to tell me about. They'll text me. I'll text them back. Really? How'd that happen, right? Whatever it is, I want them to know that I'm there for them always, right? And it's something that I wouldn't trade, you know, and when I wouldn't trade. And, you know, actually, that journey and being on medication to this day, when I got laid off after 26 years of working in Magic, that journey helped me cope with it, right? It was devastating, you know, but it was something that I had to go through, and I did, and I came out the other side and got another job, and then it happened again in Dallas, right? But I was able to cope with it. It was hard, and I'm not going to lie. There were times that I did cry, right? Because I know now that it's okay to cry. It's okay to do that. It's okay to feel emotion, right? But back then, when I was before I saw treatment, I didn't know that. Got to be hard. Got to be tough. It's what Dad said, right?
And you understand, like, my dad was 17 years old in the South Pacific fighting World War II.
Right.
And when he came back, the things he had seen, well, I better teach this kid to be tough.
Yeah.
Because look at what the world can do.
And see, on the other end of the spectrum, see, my dad wasn't in the service, but my father, he lost his mother when he was 13. And his father was a horrible man. He was a horrible man, right? He would leave his 9 kids to fend for themselves for weeks, if not months at a time, while he went on a bender. Right. And so they had to fend for themselves, and they had to steal and eat out of garbage cans. And my father says that, you know, every time he would see that red kettle from the Salvation Army, he'd always make a beeline to it, and he put whatever he had in his pocket in it, because he said the Salvation Army saved him and his siblings so many times. They fed them, right? This is when they would do that. They clothed them, and he never forgot that. But his father, it was funny because growing up, we didn't live close to him, but in times that he would visit, we never called him Grandpa, and we never called him Pawpaw or anything. He was always called Dad's father. That we were not told to do that, but it was a vibe, right? My dad didn't like his father, but he respected the fact that that was his father, right? But there was a line, right? When that man died, my father wasn't going to go to the funeral, but my sister says, you have to go. This is the last time that you'll have anything to do with him. You have to go.
Yeah.
And so my father went and, you know, and got through it and felt nothing, because that man had made him numb. And I think my father was like, because of what this man did, I'm going to make sure that my son is tough enough to handle anything that comes to him.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was show no, and you should tell me that, never let him see you weak. Don't let anybody see you in a weak moment. If you feel like you're breaking down, go for a walk. But don't let anybody ever see you like that,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you understand that, right? You know, I'm 4 months old, you know what I'm saying? You know, but that was his message to me,
yeah.
right? And he didn't teach my sisters that, because they were girls. I'm a guy, I'm a male, I'm a man, right? And this is how he brought me up. And I love this man to this day. I talked to him many times. But when it came to that, he was wrong.
Yeah. I was very fortunate when my mom was passing away.
And I never got a chance to tell you, man. I'm very sorry for that.
Thank you, buddy. The hospice are so amazing at what they do. And one day they called and said she has between 1 and 3 days. And it was 2 days. And the day before she passed away, you know, she was pretty out of it, and she was reaching for people that weren't there and a lot of the classic symptoms. But she was giving hugs and kisses. And at one point I was in the room by myself with her, and her eyes were closed. But I took her by the hand and I said, look, because we, like most parents, we had a complicated relationship. Mm-hmm. We all do with our parents, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with our moms. And I said, I forgive you for everything you ever did. And you're going to do the same for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she squeezed my hand.
Wow. Wow.
Man.
She heard you. That's amazing. God bless her. That's amazing.
Lucky to get that.
Yeah. Yeah. At that moment. At that time. It's now or never.
That's it.
And she came through.
That's it.
That is incredible. I got chills in hearing you say that. So,
all right, buddy. We'll see you this Sunday.
Okay, man.
Okay.
All right.
427 DGS. So, Wheels, you'll get this. I'm not sad that the Cardinals probably aren't going to make the playoffs. I'm not mad. I'm not angry. I'm not like I'm never going back. I'm just going to miss it.
Yeah.
It would be really cool to have October baseball.
Yeah, we're just talking about this. I talk about it with Matt Pauly all the time because I did the job that he now does, and it's a long season, and there's a lot going on. And in September, when a team is, like, ramping up to the playoffs, it's awesome. Like, it's fun. You can feel it building. The ballpark's got that electricity. The clubhouse is happy, you know. And when it's like this, it's just the opposite. The crowds are quiet. The clubhouse is quiet. And, you know, everybody's just kind of like, it's not like last year. Last year was a disaster. This is not that. This is just a disappointment. It's just a And when it gets like that, it's not much fun.
Where are we around 500?
Game under. So hopefully they can avoid the losing season. Yeah. I mean, it would be the first back-to-back losing seasons in a full year since the late 1950s. So
that's a lot.
You would like to avoid that if you can. Something to play for. I mean, aside from guys playing for their jobs for next year.
440 DGS and KMOX. Rach is in Japan. Amy's in, I don't know.
Switzerland.
Yeah. They're not here, I'll tell you that much.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, are you becoming a vigilante?
What?
I might be. I felt
you the Cape Crusader?
I felt the taste of power, and I became drunk on it. As is wont to happen. I mean, that's the case that always happens, right? No, there was this...
Circle K?
The Circle K was closed, so I had to go to Walgreens the way. It was in St. Louis. I don't know exactly where, because I wasn't driving. But we stopped to get some beverages after a hot day. And I went in there, and this lady's just, like, yelling at the people at Walgreens. She'd been in her car, and they weren't bringing her order out to her. And what are you all doing just standing around? And the employees don't seem to really have any idea what's going on. And she's growing increasingly agitated. She's being very mean to everybody. She's like, where's your woman manager? And the guy's like, we don't have a woman manager here. And she's like, well, I talked to her. And they go, well, what was her name? And she goes, how am I supposed to know what her name was? Just very, very mean, very nasty. And eventually, right as I'm checking out, it becomes clear to everyone involved that she's at the wrong location.
Mm.
But she's still getting agitated. She's still getting upset. You people are so stupid. Why did it take you so long to figure out that I was in the wrong place? All this stuff. So as I'm walking by her with my drinks, and this is probably not the right thing to have done, but I put my hand in her face and I snapped right in front of her and I said, hey, be nice.
Yikes.
And I was walking out. Yeah.
That's a pretty nice way of getting that message across.
I should have done
pretty
the hand.
Impressive.
Be nice.
I should have done the hand in the face because that felt a little too much.
Eh.
I feel like that could be construed as too much. But then I ran to my car.
You're like that guy that works with the bad dogs.
I like ran to my car in fear that she was
like
going to
be Caesar Milan.
Yeah.
Chasing me and throwing things at me.
Did she respond to you?
She went back and then she started to cuss, but I was like out the door. I was like running because I waited until I was like leaving so that I didn't have to actually confront her. I could just tell her to be nice and then flee.
Sometimes people need to hear it.
Yeah, I don't think it would have worked on. I don't think.
No, it doesn't necessarily work, but I mean, sometimes they need to hear it from someone that is not their opponent in the argument. Somebody that's outside that goes, listen, lady, you went to the wrong place.
I wasn't doing it for her.
No, I get it. I get it completely. It's just a matter of, like, you went to the wrong place. Time to shut it.
Well, Trish farted.
No, I didn't. Oh, my God. I sound guilty. Say what happened.
Well, she who denied it supplied it.
I think we just did.
Please, I did not.
No, you didn't.
The door made a noise.
It did.
Speller's the propeller.
I hate you. Because anything I say right now makes me... There's no way out of this. I did not. I want to call you so many names right now, and I can't. But just know they're in my head.
Fair enough. I have never heard the door make that sound, though.
It does, every time you close it.
Thank you,
but
Kevin.
That time it closed on its own from a distance.
Yes.
Yes, nobody was coming in or out.
Yeah.
Well, Trish was bent over.
Yeah.
I was not.
And all of a sudden the door just went...
Not. Oh, my
No one saw it coming.
It said, it said the word point.
It was not. It had nothing to do with me.
We have some birthdays. Want to shout them out?
Yes. Julie Lally, good friend of all of us. Yes. Happy birthday, Julie Lally.
Birthday, Julie.
And then my sister, Linda. It's her birthday, but it's also her anniversary. So happy anniversary, Linda and Vinny.
Very nice.
Yeah. And that's it.
Getting married on your birthday seems like kind of a hassle.
Yeah, it just feels like, why would you do that? In terms of gifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You're hurting your gift potential.
It's bad planning. Yeah.
It's seriously wounding your gift potential.
And it's not all about you on that day, then. You got to share it with him.
Yeah,
like, okay.
That's true.
Do you think, I don't get invited to a lot of weddings anymore. Do you think that they are coming back down to earth after the $250,000 wedding at the Four Seasons kind of
I feel
era?
Like it's split in half. I feel like a lot of people are just like, yeah, let's just do whatever. But then there's some who just, yeah, I think it's 50-50. I haven't been to one in a while either. It just seems like, oh, God, I can't even imagine.
What would you do if you had
trying to plan one now?
Kids my age, would you try to steer them?
Yeah. But, and I would say, listen, why don't you take this money that I was going to spend and put it on a house or something? Or, you know, that's what I know a lot of parents are even doing for school. Like, hey, you can go to this school and spend blah, blah, blah a year, but how about I give you money for a car? Or so I just heard that this weekend somebody said that. Like, I think some parents are trying to get their kids to see that, yeah, while it might be fun to have 250 people at your wedding, you know, overlooking this ocean and blah, 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 but why don't you just do it the easy way?
Yeah.
You have a daughter that's marrying age. What do you think? Well,
I don't think she would want to do the big, you know, princess wedding kind of thing. I think she would rather do the smaller, keep it simple, have a good time with the people that you actually know and care about, as opposed to, because our wedding was kind of a mix, right? It wasn't huge and ridiculous and it was not expensive, but we had a lot of people there because we had big families and we were also really very young at the time. So a lot of children were there. A lot of our friends were there and they were all the same age, but it wasn't like big fancy here. We're going to spend a buttload of money on everything. So it was kind of the mix. It was
what
a fair number of people.
So the wedding's at 7:00. At 5:30, what percentage of your guest list is just trying to work up a case of pneumonia? Like, they do not want to go to your wedding.
See, I was very careful about that. I made that a very big thing. I did not invite anybody to my wedding that I didn't think would want to be there. And then the people that you had to invite that you didn't think would want to go, I just made sure to tell them, like, look, I'm going to go. Like, because that was kind of a big thing for me.
Quite
you know
a host.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Well, look, I just
here's your invitation, but really, don't worry about it.
Just send money.
Well, yeah, basically, it's like I mean, I don't.
How
I don't,
did you
I
communicate that to them?
I just said like, don't worry about it. You don't have to come. Like, you can come if you want,
that
but don't
hurtful.
Feel like you have to.
Yeah, because it's almost like you're saying I don't care if you're there.
They weren't.
It's
they
exactly
weren't sad
like that.
They weren't sad about it.
Did they? Okay, so. Those people, if they ended up not going because you said don't worry about it, do you expect a gift because you sent an invitation?
Nope. And I didn't get one, and I didn't care. That's fine. Didn't bother me at all, because the thing is, it's like, look, for one reason or another, I have to invite you. I know this isn't really your scene. I know you probably wouldn't want to be there, so don't feel like, you know, I'd rather just get that out of the way than know that they're dreading, like, oh, God, it was
Wedding. Did you go to the hammock room at the Ritz-Carlton?
The hammock suite at the resort.
You got what's the typical like age group you think when you guys have gone to weddings? Like, I mean, obviously there's always a few kids, and then there's some people that are like grandparents' age and even sometimes a little bit older. Because like our wedding was like super young people. Like my parents were 50. You know, like the parents.
So it was mostly your friends' age?
So it was mostly people that were like under 60. Like that was the vast majority of people at the wedding. I would say like 80 to 90%. And then there were tons of people. We were all just out of college. So
tons
of college age people and cousins that are all roughly around the same age.
I guess it depends
it's
on
a different
what age
vibe.
You're getting married. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the ones I was at recently were kind of like, one was kind of like that, but it was a niece who is that age. She's young. She's probably in her. I think she's 27, something like that. So
my buddy Dan Schnurman got married out of law school in Houston. So we had a bunch of weddings, and me and my pals went down to Houston. It was a big wedding, lots of money, and I was a groomsman, and I was trying to pick out the bridesmaid who I was going to hit on, and I found her, and she was gorgeous, and she liked me, and I was making her laugh, and she was sitting at the table next to me immediately after the wedding wearing a white dress, and I dropped an entire glass of red wine on her chest.
Of course you did. So that was it?
Right. That was it. Oh, that was it.
By accident, right?
No, I thought that's...
I got to get her out of this dress. I'm going to spill some wine on
her. I can't keep that on.
Here, let me get that for you.
There's really just the one option here.
Well, Trish farted.
No, I didn't. Oh, my God. They sound guilty. Say what happened.
Well, she who denied it supplied it.
I think we just did. Please, I did not.
No, you didn't.
The door made a noise.
It smellers did. The propeller.
I hate you. Because anything I say right now makes me... There's no way out of this. I did not. I want to call you so many names right now, and I can't. But just know they're in my head.
Fair enough. I have never heard the door make that sound, though.
It does, yeah, every time you close it.
Thank you,
but
Kevin.
That time it closed on its own from a distance.
Yes.
Yes, nobody was coming in or out.
Yeah.
Well, Trish was bent over.
Yeah.
I was not.
And all of a sudden the door
I
just
was
went.
Not. Oh my
no
God.
One saw it coming.
It said the word point.
It was not. It had nothing to do with me.
We have some birthdays. Want to shout them out?
Yes. Julie Lally, good friend of all of us.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Julie Lally.
Good birthday, Julie.
And then my sister, Linda. It's her birthday, but it's also her anniversary. So happy anniversary, Linda and Vinny.
Very nice.
Yeah. And that's it.
Getting married on your birthday seems like kind of a hassle.
Yeah, it just feels like, why would you do that in terms of gifts?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You're hurting your gift potential.
Right. Bad planning. Yeah.
It's seriously wounding your gift potential.
And it's not all about you on that day, then. You got to share it with him.
Yeah,
like, okay.
That's true.
Do you think, I don't get invited to a lot of weddings anymore. Do you think that they are coming back down to earth after the $250,000 wedding at the Four Seasons kind of
I feel
era?
Like it's split in half. I feel like a lot of people are just like, yeah, let's just do whatever. But then there's some who just, yeah, I think it's 50-50. I haven't been to one in a while either. It just seems like, oh, God, I can't even imagine.
What would you do if you had...
Trying to plan one now.
Kids my age. Would you try to steer them?
Yeah. And I would say, listen, why don't you take this money that I was going to spend and put it on a house or something? Or, you know, that's what I know a lot of parents are even doing for school. Like, hey, you can go to this school and spend blah, blah, blah a year, but how about I give you money for a car? Or so I just heard that this weekend somebody said that. Like, I think some parents are trying to get their kids to see that, yeah, while it might be fun to have 250 people at your wedding, you know, overlooking this ocean and blah, 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 but why don't you just do it the easy way?
Yeah.
You have a daughter that's marrying age. What do you think? Well,
I don't think she would want to do the big, you know, princess wedding kind of thing. I think she would rather do the smaller, keep it simple, have a good time with the people that you actually know and care about, as opposed to, because our wedding was kind of a mix, right? It wasn't huge and ridiculous and it was not expensive, but we had a lot of people there because we had big families and we were also really very young at the time. So a lot of children were there. A lot of our friends were there and they were all the same age. But it wasn't like big, fancy, here we're going to spend a buttload of money on everything. So it was kind of the mix. It was a fair number of people.
So the wedding's at 7. At 5:30, what percentage of your guest list is just trying to work up a case of pneumonia? Like, they do not want to go to your wedding.
See, I was very careful about that. I made that a very big thing. I did not invite anybody to my wedding that I didn't think would want to be there. And then the people that you had to invite that you didn't think would want to go, I just made sure to tell them, like, look, you don't have to go. Like, because that was kind of a big thing for me.
Quite
you know
a host.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Well, look, I just...
Here's your invitation, but really. Don't worry about it.
Just send money.
Well, yeah, basically. It's like, I mean,
How did you communicate that to them?
I just said, like, don't worry about it. You don't have to come. Like, you can come if you want, but don't feel like you have to.
Yeah, because it's almost like you're saying, I don't care if you're there.
They weren't sad about it.
Did they? Okay, so those people, if they ended up not going because you said, don't worry about it, mm-hmm. do you expect a gift because you sent an invitation?
Nope. And I didn't get one, and I didn't care. That's fine. Didn't bother me at all, because the thing is, it's like, look, for one reason or another, I have to invite you. I know this isn't really your scene. I know you probably wouldn't want to be there, so don't feel like, you know, I'd rather just get that out of the way than know that they're dreading, like, oh, God, it was a wedding.
Did you go to the hammock room at the Ritz-Carlton?
The hammock suite at the resort.
You guys, what's the typical, like, age group, you think, when you guys have gone to weddings? Like, I mean, obviously, there's always a few kids, and then there's some people that are like grandparents' age and even sometimes a little bit older. Because, like, our wedding was, like, super young people. Like, my parents were 50. You know, like, I mean, the parents...
So it was mostly your friends' age?
So it was mostly people that were, like, under 60. Like, that was the vast majority of people at the wedding. I would say, like, 80 to 90%. And then there were tons of people. We were all just out of college. So,
tons
of college-age people and cousins that are all roughly around the same age.
I guess it depends on what age you're getting married. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the ones I was at recently were kind of like... One was kind of like that, but it was a niece who is that age. She's young. She's probably in her... I think she's 27, something like that. So
My buddy Dan Schnurman got married out of law school in Houston. So we had a bunch of weddings, and me and my pals went down to Houston. It was a big wedding, lots of money, and I was a groomsman, and I was trying to pick out the bridesmaid who I was going to hit on, and I found her, and she was gorgeous, and she liked me, and I was making her laugh, and she was sitting at the table next to me immediately after the wedding, wearing a white dress, and I dropped an entire glass of red wine on her chest.
Of course she did. So that was it?
Right.
That was it. That was it.
By accident, right?
No, I thought that's...
I got to get her out of this dress. I'm going to spill some wine.
Harold, we can't keep that on.
Here, let me get that for you.
There's really just the one option here.